Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to this edition. This, I hope it's going to be not a wacky edition, because it is April Fool's Day. It's April 1st as we record this, but this is Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, my friend, always great to catch up with you. Are you a big April Fool's guy? Do you strike me as a guy that probably doesn't get into April Fool's.
No, I don't. I'm trying to be on guard to make sure that nobody gets me.
Well, I forget about it half the time.
Yeah.
So you get on social media and you see all these breaking stories and you're like, those aren't actually real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So I was on guard this morning with my wife and going into work. I think, you know, chances are somebody's going to try to get to me.
Yeah, I've had this more often being in the sports world, being in the, you know, the radio, the reporting stuff. And I have fallen for a lot of it over the years where you see a story like, the Broncos are trading, you know, just for example, like the Broncos are trading Bo Nix. And you're like, whoa, it's a blockbuster. They wouldn't do that. And then, oh, it's April 1st. Do you see that kind of thing?
Got
so
me.
You got to be careful with that kind of thing. No question about it. But I know you guys aren't fooling around as we're talking spring football and getting ready for next season. Going on your fourth season already, Coach, right?
That's right.
Fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
It's moving fast, man.
It is. And really fun to see the recruiting of local high school Colorado kids, at least as the foundation and the majority start to pay off. We actually added a player this offseason that we haven't signed yet. He's a transfer from another school, and so I can't say his name, but he came to practice yesterday just to watch. And he's a Colorado kid that went to another school in the Big Sky, played there, and then saw what was happening here, knows so many of the players, if not personally, if not from actually playing on the same team in Little League or in high school, he's played against them. He knows so many of our guys, and he's just standing there pointing out all the guys, and they're kind of waving at him, and so going to be a nice addition to our program. But the point is, you know, now in year – you know, in year three last year and now going into year four, I can see these initial freshmen that we've recruited now, they're stepping into an expected role of being competitive and winning the Big Sky. Our upperclassmen right now, they represent that whole effort. And it's really special to see that. And it would have been impossible in year one and two to start to see that because we went into the freshman recruiting right away. So the idea that freshmen are going to come in and compete at any Big Sky school on a consistent level as freshmen and sophomores on the field is kind of, it's a stretch.
You have to be so patient and you have to be so confident in your plan. Because if you go back and listen to the very first or second podcast we ever did, it was not this. It was, well, we got a lot of guys that are kind of, you know, bending the other way. Yeah. And we got to try to correct the spine and get everything aligned here. And, you know, I know you and I have had several conversations, not even on this podcast, just about what that looked like. Was there doubt? I mean, when you start this kind of thing, you're not just getting into coach X's and O's and hire the great coaching staff. And I know it's a part of that. But when we talk about building a culture, that sometimes can be harder than developing a guy as a player. I would imagine, just from the outside looking in.
Yeah, they're complementary, I think. You know, to build a player's potential, you really have to have them buy into a culture of continued renewal of work ethic and being willing to endure all of the discipline that it takes to get better and better and continue to reset cycles. But I'll say, like you mentioned, you know, it must take a lot of conviction. It must take a lot of patience. And I'll just say the thing that I was most convicted about when I took the job was that we could not do it with the transfer portal because there's a price tag on many of the best players in the transfer portal. I didn't think we could do it recruiting head-to-head with other schools. Yeah. And so the idea that we would build a team from California or Texas or Florida or everywhere else where the roster that I found when I got here, I just felt like that's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to disagree with any way that it's been done before, right? Like, you know, Ernest Collins, Ed McCaffrey, like they know football, you know, and but they are also, they have different connections. They have different opportunities. They have, you know, Ernest had a significant part of his career in Texas. Ed McCaffrey is known nationally. And so maybe they could have built the program in the way that they saw. But for me, the only option that I saw for UNC to be successful with the challenges we have is to develop with a long-term eye toward getting to the top of the conference with local Colorado high school football players. And that was always going to take a little bit of time. So now to be to the point where we really could make a starting 22 of Colorado kids and they would be very competitive right away. And we're not going to do that, right? Because we don't make the depth chart based on where you're from.
Yeah.
But we've recruited that. And so now you're starting to see that through every position. There are a significant number of Colorado kids who have been here for years now.
You're still not planning to do the, because I know one week we went off on, I was just loving all the Colorado guys you're bringing in. And you're like, yeah, we're not like running out of the huddle saying 1, 2, 3, 4 Colorado.
Right.
But it is, there's a mix. And obviously you love those guys that are coming in from out of state too. And it's not that player is lesser than the other player. But when you just look at, you know, what is it? Location, location, location. Obviously, if you have a player in Colorado and they're good in high school and they have a good following, there's a good chance that following comes over here. They start watching your games. A stud player, we talked about this off the air a bit, a stud player, very popular in his high school, suddenly goes to UNC. There's a lot of people that are like, whoa, that guy went to UNC. That obviously that we talk about enrollment and that kind of thing. So it does help so many other things other than just what's on the football field, not to say that Colorado guy is lesser than guy you got from, you know, wherever outside of the state. But it is important to have kind of that proper mix, the right mix, especially for UNC.
That's right. I really feel like what we're doing here, the way that we're recruiting is the best for football, but I'm also convicted that it's the best thing for UNC right now. Our enrollment is suffering. And I really believe that in terms of sending out an enrollment counselor, from the UNC campus to XYZ High School somewhere in the state and, putting a pennant up on the wall and pinning a brochure up on the bulletin, I don't know how many eyes that draws from that high school junior, senior population. But I know that, you know, now, particularly in the top classifications of high schools where the most students are, we have multiple players from each of those schools, multiple student athletes. And that there is big time visibility in that from the whole student body, you know, mm-hmm. and obviously I come from my own frame of reference, right? I was not me and the other, you know, so-called, athletes at my high school. We weren't maybe the most popular kids, but people knew who we were, right? And we all knew each other. We had a big high school in the Bay Area of California. And you know where your classmates are going.
Mm-hmm.
And when some of the top, football student athletes are going to a school, that brings recognition to that school. So I'm only setting about to win football here. But I really think we're going to win in the enrollment game from a campus-wide standpoint because of the way that we're doing it as well.
And it's just you have created from day one you started building a foundation, and it's a hard thing to do. It's at the beginning it would seem easier. You bring a big name guy. You mentioned Ed McCaffrey. You bring a big name guy like that who's popular in the state and. Was a heck of a Bronco, played for the Niners too, and you think, well, that's a big name. He's going to be able to go get a few other big names, but there was always the concern, especially as it kind of progressed. And this isn't a knock on Ed All Day Show, but what's the foundation look like? You know, what do these players all have a great relationship with each other? Do they love this school? Are they really going to represent this school? Are they doing the right things every single day to put this school? And some did, some didn't. But what I've seen with you, and that's how we start the podcast, is that foundation of guys, freshmen that you were working with are now leaders of this team, where you don't have to be as vocal talking about what you want, you know, to build as far as this this culture. You have a lot of your players are just doing that. We had Miles McClarity, and again, a unique story. He was in last week, but what a great representation of your football program. Just a great young man. And I met so many of those guys last year. And so that foundation, it takes time to build it, but it's stable when you start to get there.
Yeah. You mentioned Miles, you know, what is that regional cohesiveness that we're trying to build? What does that actually look like? If somebody were to ask me that, what it looks like is the weekends. When I first got here, we would go through a very basic training session. And at this time, every bit of running that the players did in the offseason, I did. Every bit of lifting, I did it right there alongside of them. We were packing that weight room full so that they could all see me do it. We ran the whole team at once so that they could all see me do it. And the idea was to stop them from complaining. Mm-hmm. Like, look, it's a privilege to train. And we've since then, we've broken up our training groups into several, almost we have seven different training groups throughout the day. So the idea that my participation, you know, would hit like it did back then, it's not possible anymore. But we don't need it. So back then, in those first couple years, and I was training next to the guys, we would have guys over throwing up in the bushes, stepping out of the weight room, disappearing for 5-10 minutes in the bathroom. I mean, it was just a mess. Mm. And now you've got guys like Miles, and you've got local guys. So we used to train the guys early on Saturday morning. The idea being, we got to give these guys, you know, a reason to go to bed at a decent time on Friday night. Stay out of trouble.
Right.
Stay away from the substances. And training hard on Saturday morning is a way to do that. Well, at that time, we had about a 2.3 team GPA. I mean, it was just a mess. Well, now we're at a 3.4 team GPA. We're shooting for 3.5 this semester. Mm. It's got to be one of the top in the country, particularly for a public school.
It's incredible.
And we've got these local guys. And so when you come in on a Monday or Tuesday and you ask guys, hey, how was your weekend? These guys and their teammates are going to Miles McClarity's house, mm-hmm. meeting parents. These guys are going down to the Denver metro area where a lot of our players are from. And some of the out-of-state players are going with them, meeting their families. It is a completely different atmosphere. And so now we're able to give the boys Saturday and Sunday off to recover, which is the most important part of training is recovery.
Well, and there's a trust factor too, I would imagine. Now,
there is a trust
where
factor.
Now you know these guys aren't, you don't really expect them to go out and do something silly. So it's, you know, hey, I trust you guys to do the right things. We don't have to be grinding every single weekend.
Yeah, we're still putting in, we're allowed by NCAA rule 8 hours per week to train the players. But instead of spreading it out to try to manipulate their ability to do nightlife.
Yeah, right.
We trust them now because it's showing up. It's really hard to train every day, get stronger, gain weight, have great GPA, and be out boozing. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't happen that way, you know, at least not on a consistent basis. And so we know where they're at right now. And not a week goes by that I don't remind every coach. So we have there's a philosophy for us around in our staff room. It's called position control. So if you, for example, are the linebacker coach, you're responsible for the linebacker GPA. You're responsible for any off-the-field misbehavior. You're responsible for the community service support level from the linebackers. That's called position control. And I keep reminding our staff, I am looking for somebody on this team to make an example of.
Hmm.
And we haven't found it yet this semester.
Wow.
We can't find the guy that we need to make an example of. We did have one walk-on player who, on his third occasion of being late to training, we gave him some time off, and so that, you know, that's kind of the one example we've had. But I don't even think it really hit because he was kind of on a tryout basis anyway. Hmm. You know,
yeah. That's insane, though. Like, you're not that you want it, but it helps. You're kind of looking for somebody to almost screw up so you can make an example of them, but you just don't have the dudes that are doing that.
Yep, it's wild. It's just not. I don't want to give specific examples of the first couple of years, but we had, you know, if you took a sample of other coaches around the league and, hey, who are some of the top players at UNC? Because I talked to a lot of them when I took the job and, oh, yeah, you've got this guy and that guy. These are good players. You know, you got a good foundation there. There's some talent. Some of those best players were just completely fighting the idea that you would need to train in the off season. So you've heard me talk about smarter, tougher, better condition. I'll give you some insight, and anybody who's listening, smarter, tougher, better condition is the core foundation of our culture. And I've been thinking a lot on kind of this, and this team has inspired this thought, a little different way of looking at that smarter, tougher, better conditioned. I'm defining right now smarter as recognizing the link between the work and the success. What is required to have the success that you want? That to me is smarter. Mm-hmm. From a student athlete standpoint, with what we're trying to accomplish here, that is a way to define smarter. A way to define tougher that's very pertinent to what we're going right now is the willingness to endure that pain, right? That work. And it's not always like weight room work or sprints. A lot of times it's getting to bed on time, getting up on time, taking care of your financial life and your academic life, your social life, so that you can thrive in football, right? But be willing to endure that pain and discipline. That's tougher. And then better condition is really the result of that, but also the willingness to reset at a higher level all the goals, to become even smarter and tougher and endure more pain and more discipline and become better conditioned over and over and over. And that's really where I feel like the majority of our team is at right now. And those that aren't there are just kind of, they're being left behind and they're not on the depth chart where they want to be. We've got 110 or so players. There will only be 63 on the first travel squad, the first road game that we play. And, that the guys that are doing it right, they've got the best chance to be on that bus.
Well, and we continue our position preview as well and looking at some of those guys that are doing it right. And I know we're going to get to that today. We're going to talk about safeties. I thought it made sense since we had Miles on the show last week. And that was self-serving for me because he's got a voice like a radio guy. So, of course, I'm like, you know, he can't play for UNC forever. You know, we wouldn't be stealing him away from you because at some point he's going to graduate. And I don't know what his football future looks like, but he's got a radio voice, man. So we can talk about the safeties a little bit. It's funny with Miles. I asked him, I said, did you, because he looks like he's beefed up.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like he's beefed up. From the first time I saw him when he came in here to do a podcast, you know, he's fairly skinny. And you know, he comes in last week and he's bulked up. So I said, do you like to lift? And I asked him on the air. I was like, because clearly you're into that now. And he was off and on the air. He's like, it's become such a fun thing for me. Like the goals that you put forward. So there's one right there that's like, yeah, I didn't really do a lot of lifting in high school, even though he was a really good player. But now he absolutely loves it. Coach, I had a question on the positions. You mentioned something that kind of caught my attention on your position coaches. How, you know, I always wonder, how does a guy get a job? Okay, he's your running backs coach. How does that guy elevate himself? You know, because there's only so far he can go within the program. So what does that look like? And you know, when they're developing that resume, and you're telling me it's not just did you have great running backs, but you're saying all these other things that go into it. Their GPA, did their guys stay out of trouble? Those are all things I would imagine. I don't know, does that like go on a resume? Guy like, none of my dudes got into trouble. All my guys had straight, you know, A's and B's. They gave back to the community. They, between my group, they had 1,000 yards, whatever. What goes on to like a position group or a position coach's resume?
For in the head coaching circles, which are those are the guys doing the hiring in football, in the head coaching circles, the resume is what the previous head coaches will tell you about that coach. And so you don't necessarily put those kind of position control things on the resume, but your first and foremost resume is, have you been in a winning program? If you look at athletic director, it's really bizarre, and this is a little bit self-serving, right? I'm at a place, and both of my head coaching opportunities have been at places that are challenged, places that have more obstacles, places that have less resources, right? You watch any of the hires that happen in any given offseason, for the most part, the athletic directors are going to the places that have the most resources. You know, if from a Big Sky standpoint, it's like, hey, let's go get the guy at Montana State, you know, like,
yeah.
Those guys are great coaches. You know, Jason Eck is doing a great job right now at New Mexico, but he was also at Idaho. Like, Idaho has a ton of resources. It doesn't look, You walk around the University of Idaho's facilities for football in Montana and Montana State, it doesn't look anything like what we've got. We look much more like Greeley West High School.
Mm.
In fact, Greeley West High School has a nicer weight room than we have. Mm. Like, so ADs oftentimes will go to, they're going to get their next head coach from Alabama. They're going to get their next head coach from Indiana now, right? Because they feel like that's where the coaches come from. And so you're being part of a winning program is definitely, that's first and foremost. That's kind of the big, sexy, flashing light for a position coach that's maybe trying to move through the business. And then next, it's, you know, head coaches call each other. We don't have a lot of opportunities as head coaches to have people on our staff that will disagree with us, that will tell us things that we don't want to hear. But as head coaches, we can do that and compare notes, and we don't work for each other, right? And so you get a much more honest opinion. And I think that's, as a position coach, that's really what you want to cultivate the most, is that opinion that the head coach that you're working for, what is his opinion of you and your ability to do things with especially position control?
How does that process even begin? Let's say, you know, you obviously last year, it felt like you were starting to break through that wall. You know, this team's starting to get better. We talk about that foundation, freshmen are growing up with this program, everything's starting to work out. Let's say next year's even better than that. Is that suddenly coaches you're playing are paying attention, or are we looking at upper level conferences suddenly start looking and going, what's, you know, I'm going to have to fill some positions at some point. What's going on at some of these other conferences? Who's some up? How does that process even begin? And how does that process work for you?
Well, let's take like a specific look. JB Hall was our safeties coach last year, went to Wyoming. Wyoming, a few weeks after we played Colorado State, they're preparing to play against Colorado State. The head coach at Wyoming is a defensive guy, still calls the defense. He's watching our guys give up 1.8 points per possession. So points per possession is something we pay close attention to. You know, a lot of, you know, fans and stuff, media, you look at kind of points per game. Oh, these guys give up 29 points a game. Well, you know what I mean? If you're the defensive coordinator for Lincoln Riley and he's spilling the ball all over the place and trying to go as fast as he can, you're going to play a lot of series. That's why all of Lincoln Riley's defensive coaches have been fired.
Hmm.
It's just a matter of time before his defensive coach, you know, before he shuffles the blame onto the defense, fires the defensive coordinator, gets a new one. They're all excited, and then you know they try to get
wash, rinse, repeat kind of
thing.
Yeah,
exactly. And so we pay a lot of attention to, or the most attention to, points per possession. So if our offense is going fast, and at times that we have, and at times we've put the ball in the air a lot because that's what we thought we needed to do, or the only thing that we could do successfully. Okay, well the defense is still working on points per possession. So if you have 15 possessions, that's a lot different. 15 possessions, 2 points per possession is kind of the target, to be right at or below 2 points per possession. Okay, you're going to give up 30 points. That's not great, but at 15 possessions is a lot of possessions in a college football game. You're typically going to be right around 11. So if you're giving up 2 points per possession and you have 11 possessions, that's more like 22 points. Okay, now you're talking about playing some decent solid defense. And anything less than that is where you get into the elite. So again, back to JB and Wyoming, we're giving up 1.8 points per possession at Colorado State. That is elite defense. Wyoming sitting there, you know, coming together with a game plan, trying to figure out how to stop Colorado State. And so that is the first impression right there is, okay, well, you coach safeties at UNC. You guys know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You went in there with an FCS program and gave up 1.8 points per possession. And anybody that's in college football knows how good the Big Sky is. So whatever happened from there and whatever, you know, points were allowed or not allowed, there's a level of respect for a guy that's coaching in the Big Sky Conference. And so that's how I would say, when you say, how does it get started? There's no question that when the head coach at Wyoming first started to consider some safety options, he knew of JB's product at UNC.
Mm. So it's not just always who you know, and it's not just directly who you're playing. It's teams that are playing the guys you were playing, doing their scouting stuff, and they're looking at film, and they look at it and go, wow, UNC kept this team down to whatever. That's interesting, because you know, you always just hear it's all who you know, and coaches have connections all over the country, and then they just kind of keep going around that. But they build a lot of those connections based on their opponents and their opponents' opponents, too. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and then I think it's the defensive line coach at Wyoming had worked with JB somewhere along the line at Adams State, I think it was. And so there's another in. And then, like I said, that head coach connection. I don't know Jay. I didn't come up with Jay, but the head coach at Wyoming, you know, he just picked up the phone. Hey, yeah, it's Jay over at Wyoming. I'm looking at your guy, JB. Want a number one, get your blessing and make sure that that's, you know, okay with you.
Wow.
And which is just a common courtesy.
Is that a normal common courtesy? Does that happen all the time? Or what he did was kind of a stand-up move?
It is amongst the real ones.
Okay.
But in this business, you get a lot of guys kind of, you know, as Jim Harbaugh said it, they're born on third base. Mm. They haven't come up that way. They've been given everything, you know, whether they're good coaches or not, right? Like Lane Kiffin's a good coach, and Lane and I hung out with Lane when we were like 24 years old one night, you know, in Pullman, Washington. I was coaching at Idaho. He was at USC. Steve Sarkisian was also at USC. We hung out on Friday night, you know, after all the work, getting ready for Saturday games. And Lane's a good guy, good football coach, but his dad's one of the most legendary NFL defensive coordinators that ever played the game, right? Yeah. Like, that's a different guy. I don't know if Lane would call me or not in that situation. Mm. But the guys that have really grinded and come up through small college football, and they know how much these jobs are cherished and how hard guys work. Yeah, they're gonna make the call. Including, I would say Jay is probably the type of guy that if he had five candidates, he would call the other four that didn't get the job and explain to them.
Hmm.
And I've had in the past coaches that didn't do that. And it's kind of bizarre to me that you would not do that for somebody that you brought in on an interview and you know how hard they've worked for that position and tried to compete for it, and then you can't give them the courtesy of a phone call.
It's interesting to hear that because I almost assumed the other way, that coaches weren't calling you unless there was just like we know each other, you know. But I almost just assumed that, you know, it's Jay Sauvel's like, you know, I like that guy, so I talk to him, he's in, whatever, just move on.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear actually that there are some at least that still kind of do what I think would be the right thing to do in that situation.
Yeah, I think it's most. It's just. Some of these guys just, they haven't been through the hardship enough, and it'll come. Football teaches us lessons, but they haven't been through the hard places enough to know that it's not all them, you know? Like, they know, because I don't care if you're Nick Saban. Like, you bring in a high school coach, any high school coach from anywhere in the state, and you guys start talking football, Nick Saban's going to learn some things from that high school coach.
Yeah.
And I only use high school coach not because it's like a lower level. It's just, I think most people make this assumption that you've got high school coaches and then college coaches are better than that and then pro coaches are better than that. That is absolutely, in terms of the X's and O's, that is not how it works.
Hmm.
And for guys that have had to actually come up and climb that ladder, you realize that oftentimes the least creative coaches are the NFL coaches and college after that. And the most creative, most forefront thinking coaches are the high school coaches that are having to do this without recruiting. They've just got the kids they've got, and they've got to somehow try to find a way to win.
Hmm. You guys go to Wyoming this year. I'm excited about that one. Now it's a game. Like, again, me doing shows for so long, now I look at it like, especially with this conversation, I'm like, yeah, this is an opportunity. But do you ever feel like, what is it, the Hulk uses, like an exposed nerve? Because if you go there, you put up a battle, you maybe walk out of there with a win, suddenly... That Jay Sauvel call about JB Hall, maybe there's 14 other calls coming your way too, man. I mean, that's what's fun. It's cool about it, but at the same time, it's like with more success, you got more people looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, and that should be part of it. We've got young coaches that, you know, we're ready to step in. Jack Grauberger was on our staff. He's now coaching the safeties. You know, and so you're happy for, you know, I'm happy for JB's success. Wyoming's paying him a heck of a lot more money than we could have. He's also, you know, at least theoretically and consistently over time, that would be a higher level of football. I'm not going to say that it's a higher level of football right now than the Bears because they're on our schedule and we want to go up there and compete to win. But yeah, again, back to the, you know, the classiness of Jay, you know, when he called, he said, hey, I realize we're playing each other. I'm not bringing him up here to teach us what you guys do. You know, there's a line there and I won't cross it. And I, you know, was able to say, hey, Jay, you'll find this out when you talk to him. But JB's a pro. He knows that line too. And he would call you on it if you started to get too far into our check system or something like that. But I trust you because you're making this call and you didn't have to make this call. So thanks.
Man, but that's a lot of trust too. Because like, even just one little question to JB is like, hey, what do they do in this situation? Yeah. And that's that's got to be tough. And that just, I guess that speaks to the, you're making me like Jay Sauvel a little bit more. And I didn't dislike Jay. We've had him on the program a couple of times. But just hearing these extra stories makes me pretty excited about him.
Yeah.
For Wyoming.
Yeah. I think he's one of the good guys.
Yeah. And those are the guys I root for.
And most of them are.
Yeah.
You know, and a moment ago when I was talking about Lane, I don't know him well enough to say he's not one of the good guys. It's just a lot of times when guys come off completely out of touch, it's because they came up out of touch.
Yes.
And there are a lot of guys that, you know, like the NFL is filled with them where the owner likes a player a lot. So it's time to cut the player. So they say, hey, let's get you into coaching. They never had any intention to be a coach. They were just a great player. And sometimes you meet those guys, or when I've been in NFL facilities, been a guest at a training camp and stuff like that, you've got a guy that's, he's not coaching at all. He's just sitting there in the meeting, and then he goes and stands around on the field, tells a story every now and then.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's bizarre for a guy like me that came up through Division III ball where, you know, we had to paint the field. We had to clean, we had games on Friday night to raise money for the program. We had games on Friday night in our stadium at the Division III level, high school games. The high schools would pay us. And then to make even more money, our coaching staff was out there. We would clean the stadium after the game. We would pick up trash after the game. We would clean the bathrooms at the stadium as football coaches. And I thought I was the most privileged coach in the world to be coaching college ball.
And to hear you say that, though, if something came down to it and that needed to be done again, you're the kind of guy that could just see doing that anyway. Like, let's say there's some kind of craziness that happens. Staff didn't show up. It was a mass exodus or whatever. You'd be the first guy that's like, I'll grab a bag. Let's go. We'll clean this up. I mean, we've seen it from you. It's what I keep hearing this stuff in the community. Word's getting out, Coach. I don't know if they're listening to the podcast or what's happening. But more and more, as I get older too, the flashy stuff can be entertaining, great for talk radio. But when you're talking to me, obviously following your career, when I'm talking about Jay Sauvel, like those kind of guys, those are the ones that you really just have a soft spot for. And you really root hard for. And I think a lot of football fans share that same sentiment.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you can somehow espouse that and model that as a coach, I think you're going to get the support of the majority of people who, you know, we come up with challenges. We're dealing with challenges every day in our life. We've had to overcome obstacles and climb. I think, you know, we wanted to build this program in a way that reflects what Greeley is. Reflects what Weld County is. And so in terms of being, you know, I think if I could speak, I've only been here, you know, going into on 4 years now, but I think Greeley is a bootstrap community. This is a community that pulls itself up, sticks together. It's an outlier from a population standpoint in terms of Denver, not quite a suburb, right? We're out here a little bit in a different area. And, a lot of the commerce and things doesn't really run through here in the same way that it might the more populated areas down around Denver. And so I think anytime that you get a little bit of isolation like that, there's a lot of pride in what you stand for and how you pull yourself out of tough situations. And I hope that UNC football is and can be more of an inspiration.
Yeah, great representative of this state. But also I look at it too with Greeley. You know, Greeley's kind of like this is the opening when you look out east to all these eastern Colorado communities too.
Yep.
You know, and you talk about bootstrap and all that. And so I kind of look at it as like Greeley has a little mix, maybe even the best of both worlds. It's a city. It's a big enough town, I guess you could say city, but it still has a lot of those eastern Colorado small town roots, which can be dangerous sometimes too, but also there is a sense of a work ethic too.
That's right. Can we bring that together and then bring that fan base together and represent the state? Can we bring these kids from the Denver area up into our program and meld them with the kids from Eaton and Fort Morgan and build a team that can make all of Colorado proud and have, you know, the highways filled with cars coming on Saturday from all directions to come and see the Bears play.
Well, as we're talking about Greeley and bragging about Greeley, let's talk about safeties. Your safety coach is a Fort Collins guy, played at CSU. When I first saw that name, I was like, I think he was. I doing shows at that, but Jack Grauberger, is that who we're saying it? Yep. Grauberger. I just want to make sure.
Yep.
So he's jumping into that safeties role. Perfect, because there's going to, and this is another great connection throughout Northern Colorado, having him as your new safeties coach.
Right, and he got the job because of the great job he's done. Number one, he was a fit. You know, I've told you before, Eddie Gonzalez, we lost him to a coaching opportunity. I'm super proud of him. He's at Ithaca College now, but he was a D-line coach in waiting. And Jack was working with our offensive line, but he's got that safety background as a player. And so the offensive line experience is only going to enrich his understanding of the game.
Sure.
from both sides of the football. He's like all safeties, he's going to have a special teams background. But yeah, he now is has stepped into that safety role. He's got the worst job on the staff. Here's why. As a position coach, you don't want to have the coordinator that you're working for be a former coach of that position. And so Preston Hadley's a safety secondary coach, right? And then even worse is the double cross of having the head coach. I'm a defensive backs coach by trade, right?
So the spotlight or whatever you want to call it is going to be on this dude.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's the worst, right? Because like he's got Preston looking. When I look at a defensive play, the first thing I look at is the safeties. That's just the way that I've been brought up as a secondary coach.
So he's under the most pressure then, probably. As far as position coaches,
absolutely the most pressure. You know, he's probably got the least a bit of autonomy. Anything that he tries to bring to the table has got to be cleared through two people that think they know everything about safety play. It is really difficult. He's got a difficult job.
Man, yeah, that is going to be. If with your blessing and permission, I want to reach out to him and get him on the whole show, because I would love to talk about this nugget that you just mentioned too, and how much of a challenge that might be. That would be fun.
Yep.
But let's talk about the guys. Let's talk, make his life a little bit easier. Let's talk about this position. We've ran through a ton of positions here, and we thought it might make sense since we chatted with Miles. Let's look at the safeties on this team.
I'm going to mention also in this group, just so they don't get left behind on this kind of journey we're taking, some of these guys will be nickels, our nickelbacks, and so they may some at times move in and out of the safety room. And Preston Hadley now is a little more of a walk-around coordinator. And we'll be working with that nickel group, sometimes the dimes. That sometimes comes from the safety room, as well as, you know, like an outside linebacker at times will be in that Preston Hadley group. But Nathan Gillis is one of those guys. He's played corner. He's played safety. He's played nickel. I think he'll settle in at the nickel position. He originally came to us when we came from BYU. I recruited him personally from San Diego, which was my primary recruiting area during my time at BYU. Nate's a senior and has done a really nice job, contributed in on defense and special teams. Frankie Morales is going to be a four-year starter, looks like. So he's going to actually move from the nickel to the strong safety position. Okay. And, you know, he's 5'8", 185 pounds. That is jacked. It is really difficult.
Yeah, 5'8", 185.
5'8", 185 with the speed he has means that you are – ripped and strong, and he plays like it. I mean, he can come down in the box. He can blitz. I'm not a huge fan of building a team of 5'8 with 5'8 safeties, but he was here. And as I said, for my very first press conference and meeting in front of the team, if you're a Bear now, I'm the new guy. You're one of my guys. And it most of the time, I've regretted that approach with most of the players that we had here. They took advantage of that. Frankie did not take advantage of that. Frankie took advantage of the opportunity to be a Bear, and has been just a tremendous model of work ethic since we got here.
And he was—I think you brought him in last year for when we were talking. You know, in the defensive back room, we brought in several guys, and he was one of them. He was excellent,
absolutely
on the show.
Has always been one of our most consistent physical contact, courage guys. Makes plays, production game after game after game. Just a tremendous player.
I'm excited to see that. You said transitioning kind of more from that nickel to that strong safety position. So.
Yeah, he played nickel last year because we just didn't have a lot of nickel options, and he was the best option. Mm. His best position is definitely strong safety, so I think he's going to thrive in a way that we haven't seen before. Josh Harvey, Regis Jesuit kid, one of these guys who kind of, he went somewhere else and then saw what we were doing here, had a bunch of former teammates that were here and guys that he knew. And he's walked on and become a significant player for us. He's earned a scholarship, and I think he's going to play a role on special teams. And right now at the safety, he's on the depth chart and fighting for more playing time all the time. Really pleased with his daily attitude and the enjoyment that he brings of being a Bear. Trey Stott was a transfer to us from San Diego, Valor High School kid. He's working at both the strong safety and the free safety position. One of the strongest players on the team. Really, that's what stands out to me about Trey is his physical strength. Cody Lease is safety for us. He's playing the free safety spot right now. Has done a really nice job of developing his body. He transferred to us. His dad's a high school football coach in the area, and he transferred to us from Montana. Went to the University of Montana for a year, but he was there primarily as a track guy. So that fits our model a little bit better than it does Montana, right? We're looking for the developmental kid. We're oftentimes looking for the track kid that we can turn into a football player. If I were coaching at Montana, I might be a little more picky about their, you know, their football experience, their ability to play football right away, and their football skills. But for us, you know, Cody Lease is the perfect type of developmental body for us. He's about 6'1", about 190 pounds, and putting on, you know, I would say improving his skill set every day. Alfred Smith. High school teammate of Frankie Morales. Smitty's going to probably lock in at the nickel position this year. He's dealt with some minor soft tissue injuries for the last 2 years that have really kept him off the field on game day consistently. But one of our hardest workers, a guy that always shows up and is ready to go. We've already talked about Miles McClarity. Should mention too, when you first met him, he was going through treatment. So the idea that he's gotten bigger, we don't want to take all the credit for that.
Correct. But he also did tell me even in high school, he's like, hey, I didn't really like lifting. So you did kind of get that mindset shifted too. But what a story.
Yeah, I think that's the number one mindset you gotta do. I can remember in high school thinking that my body just didn't respond to lifting. Because you kind of, you know, at that age, you're immature and you expect, okay, I'm going to go work out today. And then I'm going to go look in the mirror and see if I'm any bigger. And you're like, I'm not any bigger.
Yeah, what's going on here? This isn't working.
And I think the idea of a consistent month after month, year after year, I think, you know, Miles definitely is one of those guys that's made that link now. Let's see, Corey Jackson. Corey Jackson came same time, close friends, best friends with Cam Choppa, and they came in together. Corey had also dealt with some minor soft tissue injuries. And so as Cam's kind of career took off and he was playing a lot, I think Corey's had to battle through the training room and some of that. He looks to be full speed going into this spring football session. And he was one of our top recruits. In fact, he and Cam, we offered him at the same time and they both committed like halfway through their senior season, committed early, which is always a really good sign about what a player represents.
Do you see Corey on the more of the strong safety side or free safety?
Yeah, he's playing a little more free safety right now. He's with any of our safeties. And really this is every position. If you're not a starter, then you're training all the positions in your position group. You're double training. You got to learn it all because we want to have, you know, you want to look at it this way. Who are our two best safeties? Those are the guys we want on the field, free safety, strong safety, and their best fit will determine whether they're the free or the strong. And then, okay, who are our three best safeties? Because if one of the guys goes down, we want the next best football player in the game. And the safety positions are similar enough that usually your third best safety should be the next guy in at either position. And it's certainly, if it's not the case of the third, it's going to be the case when you start talking about your top four or your top five. And so you want to have some flexibility and some utility in all positions. You know, who are your six best offensive linemen? Who are your four best linebackers? That's a really critical component that next guy up be ready to play as many spots as possible.
So safe to say today we're looking at Corey Jackson and Frankie Morales on the strong safety side, Corey on the free safety side. Is that safe to say?
Well, the one that I've got to mention right now, our starters, Mikkel Benner is moving from starting corner to free safety.
Okay.
Yeah, he's been the most ready throughout the offseason. And so it's Mikkel at free and then Frankie Morales at strong. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was just going through the roster and we actually still have Mikel at corner, because we don't, you know, when we move a guy's position, we don't go and change the website. It's not really part of our coaching.
That's what I was hoping for. But I know how that goes, especially this time of year when guys are moving around.
Well, and it's nobody else's fault either, because we very easily could have tried Mikel out for a week or two at safety and said, hey, we need you back at corner. You know, so you don't want to be just flopping the website every 20 minutes based on the whims of the coaching staff.
And then you change it before they even know what's going on. We're thinking about putting you here. Well, great. I'm looking forward to this. I love the secondary, and I'm not sucking up to you, but the corner position is my favorite. I played safety, but eight man doesn't really count as safety, right? But my favorite position to watch and talk about and learn about is the cornerback position, which maybe we'll do next week.
Tough-minded position group, you know, and tough-minded coaches. When something bad happens on a football field and the fans see it, they're generally looking at the DB coach and the special teams coach.
Yep.
And for those of us that have had that role simultaneously for a team, it's like every touchdown that happens is your fault. It is a lot of pressure to coach special teams and DBs.
And like the players, we ask them, you know, like the coaches too, you have to have a short memory, I suppose.
Exactly. That's that tough-mindedness I'm talking about.
Yeah. You're going to lose.
Yeah, your confidence has to transcend whatever the recent results were.
I mean, every player loses on the field. Every player does. But a cornerback, like, you're not really by coaches you are, but you're not really judged by, you locked that guy down and didn't even look his way. Fans aren't seeing that. I mean, they might with different camera angles and stuff. What they will notice is, well, you gave up 5 yards. He beat you by 5 yards wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we're going to look at.
Prime, the best to ever play the game. There are a lot more minutes of highlight films against him than there are of his highlights, because his highlights are really the quarterback looking the other way and getting sacked.
Yeah.
You know, that's really where his best highlights, as much as he did as a kick returner and even his interceptions and all that, there's still a far more, exponentially more catches against him than there were, you know, highlights, because that's just the life of a corner.
I think we are becoming more of an educated fan base now, though, because like Patrick Surtain for the Broncos, that guy wasn't doing what Champ Bailey was doing and getting 8 interceptions a season. He's lucky if he gets 1 or 2, but we as fans all acknowledge that's the best corner in the game.
Yeah.
He doesn't get picks because we never see him. That's the best player for the Broncos that I can say we hardly ever see.
Yeah, I'll say that the media is smarter, and a big part of that is just having more access. I mean, if you 100%. Want to subscribe to some of these All-22s, maybe you already do, to study the game.
No, I would like to, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's not expensive. You can have access to the All-22 film. And in fact, even a lot of cable packages have that now. And so when I was coming up in football, you wouldn't have that. A media person wouldn't have access to even see the corners. As a DB coach, when I watch an NFL game, I'm so frustrated. College game too, because the DBs aren't even on
there.
That's
all I want to watch, actually, is
they're not on there. Yeah, you only see the O-line, D-line, the quarterback, you know, as the snap happens, and then maybe if the action goes that way, they expand the camera a little bit, but it's really frustrating to watch a game as a DB coach
on TV. I'm going to have to talk to you about what those subscriptions look like, because I would love to get that. Coach, this was fun today. It was an awesome episode, and we started off with, I don't really know what you're feeling, man. What do you want to talk about? We knew we were going to talk about safeties, but we went in a different direction and we talked a ton of different things, and it was great.
Yeah, that's how we roll. If there's problems with that, somebody hits you up on social media and we can get more organized.
And I will yell at them.
I think it's a good flow.
Coach, appreciate it all the time, man. We'll let you slide out of here, but look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.